You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
A very good evening and a very warm welcome to your daily appointment with news from around the country and the world. My name is Rakesh Sharma and you're listening to Stories of the Day. But before I give you Stories of the Day on this day, the 15th of October, a Tuesday, I have one declaration to make. This is the last podcast that you will be hearing me on. Before I get into the news, I have to say it has been a great privilege to be able to tell you stories of the day from around the country and the world. From tracking the economic slowdown in the country, to the injustices of 370 and NRC, to victories like 377 being criminalized, to the daily clown show of the Trump administration, you know how much I love it, to Boris Johnson's antics across the pond, to following the very inspiring Hong Kong protests. Doing this particular podcast has been a source of great, great, great joy. I've learned so much in the process. I've had to consume, initially as part of my job, and later as a thing I could not live without, lots of news from around the world. My respect for brave and non-partisan journalism has grown immensely as a result of this process. People who persevere with a story, trying their best to get the facts out there, taking on powers that be, if only to ensure an informed citizenry. All of this has been truly inspiring. And the love that we as a podcast have received, from wonderful emails to helpful and encouraging comments, these have all only spurred us on to do better each day. Sure, we had very strict deadlines. We had five big stories a week and stories of the day every single day of the week and all of these things, but we tried to do as well as we could under the given circumstances, and we hope you will forgive us for any mistakes. Sure, I may have been the voice you've mostly heard on this podcast, but there's an entire team without whom this would be impossible, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank them all, if you don't mind. Sheetal Iyer, whom you've heard once in a while when I'm not there, is the best person I know and the loveliest person to work with, and my thanks to her. Our writers Harish, Reema, Maha, Harish Popla, Reema Modgil, Mahadevan have all been wonderful writers with their incessant research, have come up with some of the nicest pieces that I have had the opportunity to look over and present them to you. Our production team of Dushyant, Brian and Chandan, the team in Bombay, Keetsana Shankaran, Pranav Nair, Jerome Anthony, Nazim Khan, Santosh Anand, the editor of Money Control, Rahul, Avinash, all of them who place their faith in us to bring to you this podcast each day. Of course, I'm extremely sad that this is my last appointment with you, but of course also extremely glad that you've given us the company that you have, and each day has been an enriching and informative one. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you very much. And Stories of the Day it is. My name is Rakesh Sharma and you're listening to Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
As usual, let's start things off with some business news. We have earnings coming in. Wipro's quarter two net profit has jumped 35.1% year-on-year to 2,552.6 crore rupees. On a sequential basis, the figures grew 6.9%. The press release from Wipro went on to say, and I quote, "Revenue growth in constant currency terms is 1.1%, while the year-on-year growth on constant currency basis is 3.8%. Gross revenue for the period came in at 15,130 crore rupees, up 4% year-on-year. Earnings per share for the quarter was 4.3 rupees per share and grew 36.7% year-on-year, the company said in a statement. PTI has a report that says state-owned oil companies accused Air India of not honouring its commitment to pay 100 crore rupees every month to clear overdue ATF outstanding of over 5,000 crore rupees and will be forced to snap supplies at major airports from Friday if no solution is offered. Sandeep Kumar Gupta, who is Director of Finance at Indian Oil Corporation, told the press, and I quote, "Air India had back in June and again in September agreed to pay the three oil marketing companies 100 crore rupees every month to clear past ATF dues, but unfortunately it hasn't met its commitment," unquote. IOC and the two other oil marketing companies, that is BPCL and HPCL, Bharat Petroleum and Hindustan Petroleum, have served a notice to Air India that they will be forced to stop jet fuel, that is ATF supplies, if payments are not made. The monthly payment was besides the airline being put on cash and carry, where it was given fuel only against cash payment. The government is looking into whether hefty discounts offered on Walmart-owned Flipkart and Amazon.com during their online festive sales violate foreign investment rules, a Commerce Ministry official has told Reuters. India introduced new rules in February aimed at protecting the 130 million people dependent on small-scale retail by deterring big online discounts. The rules forced e-commerce firms to tweak their business structures and drew criticism from the United States, straining trade ties between New Delhi and Washington. While Amazon and Flipkart say they've complied with the federal rules, local trader groups say the two companies are violating them by burning money to offer discounts of more than 50% in some cases during the ongoing festive sales. Reuters reviewed emails and internal training material from Flipkart showing the company is in some cases offering to reduce or forfeit its sales commission from sellers that offer discounts. The government is now looking into it, according to the Commerce Ministry. In the INX media case, Delhi High Court has allowed the Enforcement Directorate to quiz P. Chidambaram in the media money laundering case. After the court passed the order, the Enforcement Directorate sought the court's permission to question him in some space available in Rouse Avenue court premises. The court, however, said, and I quote, "It's not in the dignity of this person that you interrogate and arrest him here in public view." The court allowed the ED to go to Tihar to question him on Wednesday and, if required, arrest him. With the Food Corporation of India granaries overflowing, the government is looking to liquidate its grain stocks to prevent damage and minimize the carrying cost in the country beyond the requirement. In fact, the Food Ministry wants the Ministry of External Affairs to look at the option of presenting the surplus grain stocks as humanitarian aid to deserving countries. Earlier this year, a committee of secretaries too recommended that the possibility of offering surplus stocks of wheat in the form of aid to deserving countries could be explored in coordination with the MEA, that is the Ministry of External Affairs. Procurement of wheat and rice in the central pool has been increasing over the years, leading to accumulation of surplus stock of wheat and rice with FCI. As per stocking norms, the total requirement of food grain in the central pool as of the 1st of July was 411.2 lakh tons, and as of October, 307.7 lakh tons. But as of September the 1st, the stock available in the central pool had risen to 669.15 lakh tons. In the past, India has donated food grain to some countries like Afghanistan, Yemen, Myanmar, Sri Lanka, Zimbabwe, Lesotho, and Namibia between 2014-15 and 2017-2018. But the same has not happened in the last 2 years. Reliance Industries has resumed crude imports from crisis-hit Venezuela using diesel exports to pay for them under a barter system that the company said complies with U.S. sanctions. Reliance was forced to cap crude imports from the South American country in March following pressure from the United States. The deal will help ease Venezuela's inventories after U.S. sanctions left its state-owned oil company, PDVSA, with huge volumes of unsold crude. Venezuela, a once rich oil-producing nation, is in the grip of an economic crisis and a political standoff between President Nicolas Maduro's government and opposition leader Juan Guaido. The situation has worsened with successive rounds of U.S. sanctions against Maduro's government, including steps that have severely curbed its oil exports. According to one analyst, this barter agreement is a win-win situation for both. Venezuela is battered with crippling sanctions, while Reliance aims to boost its profitability. With this barter deal, Reliance can procure cheap crude, which will help their refining margins, said one analyst. Refining margins are a key profitability gauge for Reliance, which operates the world's biggest refining complex in Gujarat. India became the top importer of crude from Venezuela in February after US President Donald Trump issued a de facto ban on imports. In addition to Reliance, Nayara Energy, which is a Mumbai-based company that is partly owned by Russia's Rosneft, is also a buyer of Venezuelan crude. Air India Assets Holding Limited, that is AIAHL, which is a special purpose vehicle created by the government to park part of Air India's debt, will raise about 8,064 crore rupees through a government-guaranteed bond issue over the course of the week. The proceeds from the bond issue will be used to retire a portion of debt from the airline's books, a senior official of the airline said. This is part of the airline's plans to transfer 29,464 crore rupees debt from its balance sheet to the special purpose vehicle, that is AIAHL. Following the transfer of the debt, AIAHL will be liable for debt repayment. So far, AIAHL has raised about 14,000 crore rupees through government-guaranteed bond issues. Some other headlines doing the rounds at this hour. Police custody of Singh brothers and Godhvani has been extended. And AI becomes the first airline to use TaxiBot on A320, AI that is Air India, obviously. Unisac has unveiled new chipset to strengthen its 4G portfolio. HAL employee strike continues. Unions have rejected management claim of fair offer. Vodafone Idea, Business Services and Nokia to join hands to help enterprises deploy SD-WAN. India is on track to achieve 175 gigawatts of renewable energy by 2022. Says R.K. Singh. Flipkart has upped its ante against Amazon to set up a unit for food retail in India. This is some latest news coming out of Flipkart. Karnataka Bank's quarter two net is down 5.3% to 106 crore rupees as, again, bad loans go up. India business news done. Let's take a look at what is going on in the rest of the country. For this, we first head to West Bengal. The governor of West Bengal has said he was humiliated at Durga Puja Carnival hosted by Mamata Banerjee. Bengal Governor Jagdeep Dhankar today said he felt humiliated, deeply pained and disturbed at a Durga Puja Carnival hosted by Mamata Banerjee, where he was not seated at the main dais and was not shown on TV for even a second. The governor was upset that he was not seated on the stage where Mamata Banerjee had been seated along with various dignitaries at the event held on Friday to showcase the top 70 community puja pandals. He also complained that though he spent 4 hours watching the carnival from beginning to end, he was not shown even once on the multi-camera footage that was beamed out from the event by a government-appointed agency. Mr. Dhankar did not name anyone, but left little doubt that Mamata Banerjee-led West Bengal government had shown him great discourtesy. This according to a report by NDTV. India has moved up 2 spots to become the 7th nation brand in the world. Its brand value increased by 19% in the last 1 year to $2,562 billion, according to the annual report on the world's most valuable nation brands, compiled by Brand Finance. With a brand value of $27,715 billion, the United States retains the title of the world's most valuable national brand. It is followed by China, which saw an increase in its brand value by a whopping 40% to $19,486 billion over the past 1 year. Germany ranks third. On the other hand, by registering an impressive 26% growth, Japan replaced the UK as the 4th most valuable nation brand. The UK saw a mere 3% uplift from last year. Brexit is clearly not helping its brand. Among others that made it to the top 10 include France, Canada, Italy and South Korea. While Canada went down 1 spot, 7th to 8th, Italy dropped 2 positions, 8th to 10th. On the other hand, inched up Italy, one place from the previous year. According to the report, 11 out of the 20 fastest growing nation brands of 2019 come from the Middle East and Africa. Also, Turkey has recorded a remarkable turnaround from its performance in 2018, going from a loss of almost a third of its nation brand value to this year leaping up 47% to $560 billion. The Bombay High Court has rejected the bail application of activists Sudha Bhardwaj, Arun Ferreira and Vernon Gonsalves in connection with the Elgar Parishad case for their alleged links with the banned CPI Maoist. The activists were arrested by Pune police, let's remind you, on the 28th of August 2018, that is 1 whole year ago. The court had last week reserved its order on the activists' bail plea. In October last year, a special court in Pune had rejected the bail application of Bhardwaj, following which she moved to the Bombay High Court. Advocate Yug Chaudhary, representing Sudha Bhardwaj, had told the court that there was no incriminating statement by any of the witnesses in the charge sheet, except that by a police officer who conducted the house search of Bhardwaj. He added that the documents found by the police, on the basis of which she was arrested, were not generated from her computer. In the bail application of Ferreira, advocate Sudeep Pasbola had argued that he was arrested only because of his acquaintance with co-accused Surendra Gadling and for being a member of the Indian Association of People's Lawyers. Public prosecutor Aruna Pai opposed the bail application of the three activists, stating that they are active members of frontal groups funded by the banned Communist Party of India, Maoist. Pai said that the investigation is still underway and releasing them on bail would jeopardize the probe. SMS services were stopped as a precautionary measure a few hours after postpaid mobile phone connections were restored in the Kashmir Valley. Postpaid mobile phone services resumed yesterday after 72 days, but without any internet facilities. By about 5 p.m., SMS services were stopped as well. 2 terrorists, including a suspected Pakistani national, shot dead the driver of a Rajasthan truck and assaulted an orchard owner in the Shopian district of Jammu and Kashmir around 8 p.m. Yesterday, police said the terrorists carried out the attack in Shirmal village in desperation as fruit transportation was picking up in the valley. Over 25 lakh prepaid mobile phones and other internet services, including WhatsApp, remain deactivated for now. Governor Satyapal Malik said yesterday that internet services would resume very soon, but security officials maintained the process might take up to 2 months. A decision on prepaid subscribers could be taken next month, they said. India news done. Let's turn to how international financial markets are doing. Investors cheered on Friday as the US struck a partial trade agreement with China, and there were even signs that the UK may strike a divorce deal with the European Union. But the debate over how close the world is to its first recession since 2009 may soon start swirling again. The IMF's new boss, Kristalina Georgieva, sees a serious risk the slowdown will spread, and on Tuesday said it's likely to cut its 2019 global growth forecast from 3.2%, already the weakest since 2009. Bond traders are certainly concerned. $14 trillion of bonds are yielding negative rates. By contrast, equity investors have sent the MSCI World Index up 14% this year. President Donald Trump's 18-month trade clash with Chinese leader Xi Jinping has already put global growth under pressure. Trump could also still impose levies on European auto manufacturers. Manufacturers have been the biggest trade war victims, and global activity has contracted for 5 straight months. The IMF is among those urging governments to loosen budgets, but the signs are that fiscal policy will be reactive, not proactive. Although Morgan Stanley estimates the primary fiscal deficit has risen to 3.5% of GDP in major economies, it sees it increasingly only to 3.6% next year. A model created by Bloomberg Economics puts the risk of a U.S. recession next year at just 25%. And if the world's biggest economy can stay upright, that should help offset problems elsewhere. Prior slumps were driven by a correction of excesses, such as the run-up in inflation in the 1980s, the bursting of the tech bubble in the U.S. at the start of the century, or the collapse of housing a decade later, during, of course, the 2008 crisis. This time around, inflation is generally weak, and while stock prices are elevated, they are arguably not in bubble territory. The Hong Kong Monetary Authority, that is HKMA, has cut the amount of cash that banks must keep as reserves, releasing an extra Hong Kong $200 to $300 billion, that's about 25.5 to 38.24 billion American dollars, into the broader economy, which has been hit by months-long protests and the US-China trade war. The central bank late on Monday announced a reduction of the countercyclical capital buffer, that is CCYB, the ratio of banks, to 2% from 2.5% with immediate effect, particularly aimed at boosting credit to the struggling small and medium enterprises. WeWork is expected to sack at least 2,000 people as soon as this week as angry staff at the troubled office rental company turn on its co-founder, Adam Newman. WeWork rents buildings long-term, gives them a millennial makeover with beer taps, communal spaces and tiny workspaces, and then rents them out short-term. I'm not saying this. Dominic Rush in New York, writing for The Guardian, says this, but it's accurate. Until recently, it was America's most highly valued private company with 527,000 tenants or members, as WeWork calls them worldwide. 2,000 jobs is about 13% of WeWork's 15,000 staff, and few inside the company believe the cuts will stop there. WeWork, of course, declined to comment. The company's $850 million deal to buy the landmark Lord & Taylor department store on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan is also in trouble. And two large landlords in London, where WeWork has leased about 3.7 million square feet since 2014, recently told the Financial Times that they would not sign new leases for the foreseeable future. In the meanwhile, of course, Newman, 40 years of age, cashed in around $700 million of his own shares in WeWork before a share sale that at one point valued WeWork at $47 billion. The company has begun attracting larger tenants, including IBM and Microsoft. All right, let's turn to some international politics news. The United States slapped sanctions on Turkey as it demanded an end to its deadly incursion against Syrian Kurdish fighters, accusing its NATO partner of putting civilians at risk and allowing the release of ISIS terrorists. The actions came hours after regime troops returned for the first time in years to parts of northeastern Syria, invited by Kurdish fighters desperate for protection as the United States pulls out. President Trump took extraordinary measures against a country that is officially an American ally, as he faces mounting criticism at home, where even usually supportive lawmakers accuse him of abandoning Kurds, which spearheaded the fight against the ISIS group. Lindsey Graham comes to mind. The Treasury Department said it was imposing sanctions on Turkey's defense, interior, and energy ministers freezing their U.S. assets and making U.S. transactions with them a crime. Trump said he was also ending talks on a U.S.-Turkey trade deal he valued at $100 billion and, in perhaps the most biting reprisal, reimposing tariffs of 50% of Turkish steel. The United States had slapped the 50% sanctions on Turkey last year to win the release of an evangelical pastor whose detention had stirred up Trump's base. However, analysts have called these penalties, such as a 50% tariff on Turkish steel imports and halt to trade negotiations between Turkey and US, mere window dressing. As if, bearing out that description, Turkey's lira rose this morning. The dollar was down 1% against the lira for the session, with the Turkish currency trading at 5.8628 per dollar. Fiona Hill, the White House's former top Russia advisor, told impeachment investigators yesterday that Rudolph Giuliani, that is Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, ran a shadow foreign policy in Ukraine that circumvented U.S. officials and career diplomats in order to personally benefit Trump, according to people familiar with her testimony. Hill, who served as a senior official for Russia and Europe on the National Security Council, was the latest witness in a fast-moving impeachment inquiry focused on whether the president abused his office by promising military aid to pressure Ukraine into investigating former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter, who was on the board of a Ukrainian energy company. Goran Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, is set to appear before lawmakers later this week. Sondland plans to tell impeachment investigators Thursday that the content of a text message he sent to the chief U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, insisting there was no quid pro quo in play, was given to him directly by Trump in a phone call. Sondland also plans to tell lawmakers he has no knowledge of whether the president was telling him the truth. And in a sign that the impeachment inquiry is widening, investigators were discussing whether to question John Bolton, Trump's former national security advisor and Hill's superior at the National Security Council. Lawmakers also expect to hear testimony from other witnesses, including George Kent, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State responsible for Ukraine, whom Giuliani and conservative media figures have accused of trying to protect the Bidens from an investigation. The committees plan to hear as well from Ambassador William Bill Taylor, who features prominently in the text messages with Sondland, questioning whether the administration was withholding aid in exchange for Ukraine launching investigations. Let's take a quick look at what is happening in the world of tech. Microsoft is trying to crush competition by offering free products to its enterprise customers, but regulators are not interfering, says Rani Mulla, writing for Recode. The tech giant is essentially giving away its workplace messaging software Teams in order to crush competition from companies like Slack and Zoom. Apparently, Mark Zuckerberg has been hosting private dinners with conservative leaders. Facebook CEO has been hosting informal talks and off-the-record dinners with conservative journalists, commentators, and politicians to discuss partnerships and issues like free speech. Politico has gone on to report. Zuckerberg's guests have included controversial figures like Fox News host Tucker Carlson, who has in the past made divisive comments such as saying that immigrants make the US dirtier. The tech CEO posted on his public Facebook page to say that he regularly talks to people of all political persuasions, but the dinners raise questions about the relationships Zuckerberg is fostering with conservative figures, especially given the company's recent feud with the Democratic nominee Elizabeth Warren, who has been criticizing Facebook for its new policy that allows politicians to buy ads on its platform that promote falsehoods. The Wall Street Journal has reported that European schools are emulating American models to foster entrepreneurism. Older universities like Cambridge and Oxford are pushing their researchers to license more technology and spin-off companies, a move obviously inspired by American schools like Stanford and MIT. Oxford now has a $735 million fund to help develop companies, the world's largest for any school. Watch out, US institutions, says the Wall Street Journal. At the turn of the 11th century, a Japanese woman known as Murasaki Shikibu penned what is often thought of as the world's first novel, a 54-chapter sojourn through the romantic and political exploits of a prince named Genji. The original manuscript of The Tale of Genji does not survive beyond a few fragments of text, but experts say they've identified a lost chapter from the oldest known version of the story. This rendition of the text was compiled in the 13th century by the poet Fujiwara no Teika. Four chapters had previously been confirmed to be Teika's transcriptions, and a fifth was recently unearthed in the home of one Motofoyu Okochi, a 72-year-old descendant of the Mikawa Yoshida feudal domain. Experts say that the manuscript is Teika's, based on other scripts, manuscripts by the poet. The newly found chapter chronicles a crucial part of the novel when an 18-year-old Genji meets his future wife, Murasaki, who shares her name with the book's author. The real woman behind The Tale of Genji remains largely enigmatic. Murasaki was a pseudonym, as Ian Burma of The New Yorker explains in great detail. She belonged to the Fujiwara family, which wielded considerable influence during Japan's Heian period, but Murasaki was born into one of the clan's minor branches. She was married to an older man and may have started working on her novel after he died. Junko Yamamoto, a professor who specializes in literature of the Heian period, says the discovery of the fifth Teika chapter is exciting because experts typically work off versions of the story that are 250 years older than the poet's transcriptions. The long-lost chapter, in other words, may bring scholars one step closer to the mysterious Murasaki. So this is some exciting news. There is a NASA engineer who is in the news because he's proposing a helical engine for interstellar travel with no propellant required. An engineer who works for NASA has put forward a proposal for a new way to travel through interstellar space, push a spacecraft forward without the need for any propellant at all. David Burns from NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center presented his idea on the space agency's technical report server, which provides access to documents relating to aerospace that were created or funded by NASA. Burns' research, which he funded himself, is described as an attempt to define an in-space propulsion engine that does not expend propellant. This basic concept, of course, is unproven, but speaking to New Scientist, which first reported on this, Burns said he's prepared for any and all criticism. Also, he claims that this is one way where he can actually achieve a speed closest to that of light. That's it from me today. Of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you what happened in the markets today. So let's take a quick look. It's the third consecutive day of rise in the markets. HDFC Bank, HUL, ITC and Maruti lifted benchmark indices. Positive global cues also helped boost investor sentiment. BSE Sensex was up 0.76% to end at 38,506. Nifty 50 closed above the crucial 11,400 mark at 11,428. And that is it from me for one last time. This is me taking a bow. Thank you very much for keeping us all informed, for keeping us all wanting to do better each day, read more, learn more, and give you as much accurate information as is possible. I will miss doing this every day, but I hope that you will continue to listen to the podcast. Thank you for joining us. Thank you. Do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com. I'll leave us a comment wherever it is that you listen to us. Until the next time you hear from me, wherever that may be, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.
A word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers curated market data, independent equity analysis, exclusive trading recommendations, and actionable investment ideas to subscribers. In the great Diwali discount offer, you can get access to Money Control Pro for as little as ₹289 for 1 year. Use code Diwali. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app.